Welcome to Innovation Insights, the podcast where we explore innovation in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Welcome to today's episode, where we have the privilege of speaking with a truly inspirational figure in writing and community engagement, Anna McCracken. With a rich tapestry of experiences that span from the fashion merchandising halls of Iowa State University to the reflective corners of creative writing environments, Anna's journey is nothing short of remarkable. Holding an MFA in creative writing and environment from Iowa State University, Anna has harnessed her passion for storytelling and community building to create impactful programs and workshops that resonate with diverse audiences. As the founder of the Ames Writers Collective, she has spearheaded initiatives that not only nurture emerging writers, but also serve as an inspiration for those seeking solace and expression through writing, including poignant programs like Writing Through Cancer. Anna's work extends beyond the local community, touching lives through her speaking engagements and her profound written works, which range from exploring the depths of human connection to addressing the complexities of health and grief. Her contributions have been recognized with awards celebrating her cultural entrepreneurship and dedication to fostering a vibrant community through the arts. Today, we'll delve into Anna's journey, exploring the motivations behind her transformational projects, the stories that have shaped her, and her vision for the future of writing as a tool for healing, connection, and community building. Please join me in welcoming Anna McCracken to Innovation Insights.
Thank you, Yolanda. And I was just thinking, I got to save that intro because I may need to use that myself someday. That was beautiful. Did you know you're a writer?
I feel like I'm an editor most of the time because that seems like what I do most of the time. But, oh, thank you. Well, you know, it's really just a joy to have you here today. I've been, I guess, fortunate to have you as a friend for...
Gosh, since you came to Iowa State, I think.
Yes, yeah, so yeah. 11 years. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It's gone fast. And it's been fun to watch you develop this really important program for our community here in Ames.
Thank you. And
engaging writers within the community and supporting people to write, because it's such an important part of innovation and creativity in life and capturing stories.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really thrilled to be invited.
Oh, of course. Tell us a little bit about your journey and what motivated you to pursue MFA in creative writing and environment after you had a degree in fashion merchandising.
So the impetus to filing an MFA was the idea of deadlines. I don't do well without deadlines. So if you go back to 1999, the story that started it all, you know, I've always written, I wrote Christmas letters, and then they really took a high note when I moved from Chicago to work at Stanford Law School. And I started looking for my birth mother, and I'm single and I married later in life. I didn't have kids. And so I would get these missives from families about, oh, we did, you know, this soccer game and that soccer game. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to start writing stories. When I started searching for my birth mother, it was like a 2.5 year process to the time that I finally met her. So I would write these missives for Christmas cards. And it's like, I had friends who, one of the friends now who's passed, but she pulled one out one day and was like, oh my, I'm saving this because I hope you write a book someday. So that was probably like 2000. And so I did. I started writing a story of meeting my birth mother on the day she died. And that was 1999. And here we were in, I don't know, 2017 when I moved back from San Francisco to Ames. And I'm like, this book is just languishing. And part of the problem was is that I needed deadlines. So I enrolled with another friend of mine into the program just so that I would get a final draft. Or my first real, I had tons of drafts, but I needed really a complete first draft. So, well, 20th draft, but a real complete first one. And that was why I enrolled in the program. It was convenient to be able to go here. We had the creative writing program. It's different than other programs. It's a 3-year program. And it was like having a full-time job. And, and I might have wanted to go other places, but it was, my home was here. So I was able to write here in my community, which was good.
Yeah, it is. And it was nice having you on campus, too, during that time.
I would walk along the pathways going, oh, my God, I remember my first day here when I rode my bike and my tire, you know, the one between, is it Carver and Beardshire? Yes. And my tire caught between the sidewalk and the grass and fell over. Day one, I never rode my bike again.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And that was my undergrad.
I don't blame you for not riding it again after that.
Yeah.
Well, you really do have a diverse educational background. And how has that influenced your approach to writing and also working within the community?
So, you know, thinking back on it, when I really started to write my memoir in earnest was probably 2007 or so. And I was it was one of my first ideas and innovation of let's be our own marketing director person. And it didn't work out so well, but it led me to the other careers that I had since then. But in writing, I didn't want to go back to a university. And I was taking continuing education classes at Stanford, UC Berkeley, local community colleges. But in the Bay Area, we had just a resource of best-selling authors who were teaching out of their homes. And so that was sort of one of the ways that I, you know, it's community, right? You know, I met this one author, Ellen Sussman, who had these anthologies, and she's wanted to focus on being a fiction writer. But I begged her to get into a fiction class because at the time there were no real memoir classes. And all of the structural things for fiction, except for lying about your story, are true for memoir, you know, having a good beginning, middle, and end, and everything that goes with it. Mm-hmm. So she let me in. And so I was sort of just taking classes locally with other authors who were doing the same. And so I studied with the Amherst Writers and Artists Method, which allowed me to lead generative writing prompt classes out of my home. And I was doing that to supplement my income. Mm-hmm. And through that, I met some other authors that led me on to do what I finally ended up doing here at Ames.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. And you really switched from fashion merchandising. And how has that been a change for, you know, to become a writer and what you're doing now? And did it help inform what you're doing now?
No, the fashion, you know, one of the presidents when a couple of years ago, 10 years ago, he had us stand up at a gathering and go, okay, you know, what was it about your major? Blah, blah, something. And I was like, you know what? I switched majors because I'm sitting in New York at I was a buyer for Hartz After Marks. I'd made it to a point that I wanted to make, but I was like, I am bored stiff. And I realized I didn't like to shop. And so, and to make a switch from fashion merchandising to leading, I worked at the Chicago History Museum doing fundraising and then went on to the University of Chicago. And to make that switch, I volunteered at different community things to do events and things like that, which helped me make that switch. And so everything that I did after fashion, you know, I suppose, you know, I still dress the part. I dress up for events that come up and stuff that's been informed by fashion, but making that switch into fundraising, event planning for major universities, it helps and informs everything that I'm doing now. I'm doing it on a way smaller scale, and I'm doing way too much because I have to do it all myself. But, you know, I'm doing the marketing, I'm trying to fundraise, I'm going out and pitching my ideas to cancer centers or whatever. And so that switched helped me to do what I'm doing now.
Absolutely. Yeah, so a lot of project management too, and planning and executing.
It sounds right.
Like. Yeah.
And the bizarre thing is that I stuck at the time when I graduated in 84, they didn't have Asham events.
Event management.
Event management. But I ended up it was before my time, right?
Yeah.
I was creating that. And I stayed within my first degree, which is just so bizarre to me when I sit back and think about it.
That is true. That is true. So can you tell us about the genesis of the Ames Writers Collective and its mission?
So when we, as my last semester at Iowa State, one of the professors came to me and said, you know, we don't have students. Ollie's come to us, which is Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have that across the U.S. at different universities. And they've asked us for a writer. And so I was worried that I had the flexibility to not teach, to pay for my tuition, whereas all of my colleagues, except for one, they had to teach to get through the program. So I taught at Ollie to, in case I ever interviewed somewhere, to go, yeah, I've taught. Who cares? Senior, you know, right? It doesn't matter. I taught.
Yeah,
created curriculum. So I started that, and I started realizing through them that they were lonely for other writers.
Oh.
And I knew graduating, you know, when I left the Bay, my husband doesn't like me to tell this story, but it's true. When I left the Bay Area, I knew one thing that I was going to be giving up was I wasn't moving to Iowa City, which is, you know, literature. I forget they have a really great title for their town. I didn't have that kind of writing community here in Ames. And I knew graduating that I was, you know, I had that community while I was getting my MFA, but I was going to be out there solo. And so my original goal was to sign a lease, which I still have the lease at 409 Douglas. They stopped construction the minute I signed the lease, and it's 2.5 years later. But I had this idea for a center for writers to come and write. But when that didn't, and so the mission for that first thing was, and it was a rather long one. Our first mission was to bring together writers and readers of diverse ages and cultural backgrounds to celebrate the essential art of the written and spoken word. And it goes on from there that it was going to be about storytelling and blah, blah, blah. And when that lease didn't happen, I had to go, I need to still create a community. And so I felt back on what I had been doing in California, which was leading writing groups, which I, through one of the authors that I had studied with, she was desperate for someone to sub for her at a cancer center. And you had to be a published author and you had to have cancer. I had been published, but I didn't have cancer, but she was so desperate. So I did that and I loved doing it. And so I went to the Bliss Cancer Center here in Ames, and that's really how we launched. And everything that we've done since is, you know, just sort of like, oh, well, let's do that. And so that's how the Ames Writers Collective came about. And our current mission, which was shortened to, we're committed to creating healthy communities through the art of writing.
Wow. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. I can remember that one. I couldn't remember the first one.
Oh. You've been involved with workshops, including Writing for Cancer, and you touched on that a little bit. Would you share a little bit more information about that and the impact that those types of workshops have had?
Yeah, it's, you know, not only on them, but on me. So when I went to the Bliss Cancer Center, it was sort of an experiment, and that's 2 years. We'll be celebrating our 2-year anniversary this spring. Not everybody. We've had two people pass away when we don't know what's going on with, but there's still several of the original in that group.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that for free for the Bliss Cancer Center for 2 years now. But we come together every Wednesday that I'm available. And, you know, I try and do them regularly. But we come together and I give them writing prompts and we write together and then we share. And it's all on Zoom because we started up on the tail of COVID. And what's been great about it is when I went to the John Stoddard Cancer Center in Des Moines, but they have one of our gals is Zooming in from Minnesota because she moved. And so this idea of you don't have to be in, you know, the beauty of COVID, there's so much bad about COVID, but the beauty of COVID was that it brought people together. And a lot of the cancer patients are homebound, some of them, or they go out for their treatments. But I had one that zoomed in while getting her chemo at the McFarland or the Bliss Cancer Center, And, you know, others that just weren't well and it was easier for them to stay home. And so I think what it does for them, I have this really great quote, two of them actually, but one of them that one of them wrote. I've come to regard writing through cancer writing circles as an integral part of my cancer treatment. As much as I appreciate the efforts of my medical team and support of family and friends, I still feel an aloneness in this journey. Writing through cancer writing circles has provided a convenient opportunity to air my worries, concerns, hopes, and fears that only another cancer patient can truly fathom. It is a safe space to share insights, tears, and laughter. And more times than not, we're laughing. And more times than not, the group in Des Moines, John Stoddard, tells me how, and all of them do, that how cancer stopped them and made them evaluate their lives. And that some of them, I told this to a group of oncology nurses, they didn't get the joke because they deal with dying so much. But these cancer writers have said, you know, we're the happiest people we know. We know it's going to get us, you know, and and I haven't had cancer. I've lost two girlfriends to cancer. And so I do it in their memory. But every week, and I learn about living through them and I practice my writing. We're all practicing our writing, and I don't come to them with cancer specific questions. Right. I usually bring poems or a thought or, hey, what's your word for the year? Let's write about it. And if they choose to write about their cancer, they write about it. If they want to write about a childhood experience, they write about that, you know, and we read it out loud to each other and we all hear each other's, we can all relate because something in their writing is universal. And that's the beauty of writing in community.
It is. It is. And what an innovative way to bring people together in a situation that is very difficult, but right. to support each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
really good. That's really good.
Thank you.
You also have the Swift Youth Poetry Workshops.
Yes.
And the Swift Literary Festival.
So, and some people go, why Swift? You know, that's on the side of trucks. But where I've signed the lease, I don't know that we'll ever take up space there because my lease is up in April and I don't know how I'll fund it if I don't, you know.
Yeah.
But that building is connected mm-hmm. to the Octagon Art Gallery
yeah.
or Center. And those chimneys attract swift birds every year that come to roost in that building.
Oh.
And so one of my board members said to me once, you need to start calling stuff Swift. So it's the Swift Youth Writers. And I got little birds on my marketing stuff. And those kids, one of my first grants was from the Rotary to host a week-long program for kids writing. And it's the same thing. Give them prompts. And they came and they wrote together. And we just had a poetry workshop in January, which was 3 weekends led by Iowa City poet Caleb, the Negro artist. Me. And it was in preparation for the Langston Hughes Project performance on this coming Thursday night.
Yeah.
And these kids, they ranged from 10 to 16 years old. And when you think about it, it's like, wow, that's kind of a strange mix to, you know, why didn't you do what? But it's like, they don't know how old the other is and they don't care. It's just the most wonderful space to sit in. It's just, they don't care. And they had so many issues they wanted to write about. And that was the whole thing, write about social justice or things on your heart.
It is great to have such a wide range together and writing and thinking and sharing and breaking down those, what would be viewed as generational gaps between mm-hmm. A 10-year-old and a 16-year-old.
Oh, and I lead every other or one Sunday a month at the library. I lead a thing at the library 2 to 4 p.m. at Thames Public Library on the second Sunday, and I write with them. So think about the generational there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in my 60s. These are teenagers. I've never had kids. So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, and one of them, Lily, they all, you know, what do you do? And Lily had been writing with me all last fall, and she came to this workshop and she said, so Miss Anna, how's your memoir going? And I'm like, well, Lily, I hate to report, but it's been stalled and I'm going to start working on it. And her face was just like, oh, you're not writing it? And I'm like, I'll keep you posted. She's like my little cheerleader, you know.
Your accountability partner there.
And yeah. She's 13. Right.
I love it. I love it. Oh, my gosh. I was also going to ask you, so when they're writing, do they write with pencil or pen and paper, or do they write on their computers?
Actually, I allow them to do both, but I hand them a notebook and pen, and they write. They freely and willingly write with their pen and paper.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, it's you get more to the core of things. You can get to the core on your computer, but it's, and it's been the guys who have written on computers, not so much the girls. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Journaling is something that we find really important within creativity and innovation and writing with a journal. What are some of your thoughts on that, that process of actually physically hand on paper with a journal or a notebook?
Well, I think way back when I started doing this process, when I studied for the certification in the Amherst Writers and Artists Method, I was journaling. There's a couple authors, Natalie Goldberg, who believes that you should get up every morning and write 3 pages. And my favorite author, Dani Shapiro, she always says, I'm not well if I'm not writing. And she means writing in general, but I've been rather anxious lately. And my chiropractor is like, whatever my anxiety, she's like, I think it's anger-based or something. And I'm like, okay. And she's, but aren't you a writer? Shouldn't you be writing about this? So, I saw her yesterday and I was like, I'm going to start doing this again. It takes no time to write about nothing, 3 pages every morning. And there was a point in my life where it was a really down period in my life. And I think writing saved me, you know? And I know from these kids who've written with me, when I have them read it out loud, that's actually the hardest thing for them. Some of them came back and said, you helped me get some courage and to realize that I am a writer, you know? And so there's so many reasons to write and to write in community.
Right. Yeah. That is so true. That gathering together, sharing the thoughts. Yeah. 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 What an impact you're making.
Thank you.
No, thank you. So you have had a really wide range of publications, and your pieces have ranged from palliative care to celebrating positive female connections. So how do you choose your topics, and are there any that you're particularly proud of?
The palliative care ones, those were when I was working for a hospice. So I got to interview people who were actually dying or their family members. And those, I'd actually like to get back to that, but I can't do everything. And those were so informative. Those were situational driven. I was writing for our own publication there. I did submit something recently. You know, it's sort of theme driven. When you submit out in the world, there's usually some sort of theme they want you to write to. Yeah. Or you just submit. So, right. But I think, you know, if I was proud of something, and it was a short piece, it was one of my first ones. It was the Chicken Soup for the Adopted Soul piece that I got published with in two different, they had a reprint of it, but it was about the situation of sitting by my birth mother's deathbed and introducing myself to her for the first time. So, that went out to, who knows who read that? But I've gotten busy with submitting things because I'm really focused on getting my memoir to a point where I can get it out to start for an agent this year.
Well, I would never associate the word lazy with you.
I'm not lazy, but I tend to put stuff that are important to others first and then me last. So we have to switch that around.
That sounds more accurate. Mm-hmm. So in 2023, you received the Veronica Rudenberg, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Cultural Entrepreneur Award. Tell us a little bit about that award and how did it help the Ames Writer Collective, too, having that recognition?
I think how it helps, you know, I was nominated for it. I was actually out in the country I didn't get to go actually receive my first award for my, you know, what I'm doing with my nonprofit, but it validates what you're doing. Any award anyone ever receives, you know, it validates what you're doing. And so it did that for me and it made the papers and things. So it gets the word out that, oh, there's an Ames Writers Collective. I've had several grants here in the city which are equally as important too, because grants validate that one, you're for real, and two, right? So I've had the city of Ames has given me two grants. And Discover Ames has given me a grant. The Rotary Club's given me a grant. And the Ames Community Arts Council gave me an arts and education grant. So, you know, between all of those, it just validates what we're doing, that it's, that, you know, that what we're doing is good.
And would you talk about seeking grants? And because grant writing is very different than other types of writing. And for you to be so successful in garnering grant money, but also to be a memoir and creative writer, I mean, that takes a skill to be able to switch between different genres of writing, because grant writing is very different.
It is. But, you know, in these city grants and stuff, I think it's different than when you're looking for grants in higher education, right? Those are lengthy things. But I think people have gotten so tired of, people have gotten tired of reading them, so that what they've done now is they ask for word counts. And so when I first started writing, I was writing a column on Maui. I lived on Maui for 2 years during a life transition. And my column was 700 words. And actually, this was part of the problem with writing my memoirs, that I had learned to write so concisely that it was hard for me to write bigger, which you need to do when you're writing a book, right? And I can't tell you how much writing those columns have helped me. It's like, oh, great, 250 words. I can do that, right? It's like a Twitter thing. It's not Twitter anymore, but, you know. And so you have to be really concise. And I love editing. So, and you got to be able to, and I think that's what I can do well, is that I'm able to get concise to exactly what they want. And a lot of these grant things have gotten really, you know, they want 500 words, or you got to be real concise about what you're asking for.
You do. But you have to be really on point.
And that's actually really hard for people. You know, I learned that when I'm leading my writing groups, right? And I also put word counts on my writing groups. One, because my brain won't handle longer things when we're reading to each other. But also, it helps people to hone, when you go smaller, then you can know how to go bigger.
That's very true. Yeah. So you have a marketing background. You have an event management career. You're a full-time writer, community leader. So how do all of these talents that you have combine together and help you as an entrepreneur?
On time management, or taking it around to that, how have they helped me? You know, it's I was leading huge events for the University of Chicago's business school, right? I'm leading little ones now, but I am an event planner's worst nightmare at someone's fundraising event. You know, it's like, I had to set up the entrance way this way, you know, it's like, I was doing marketing. I was doing writing with my hospice. We could just go to my last real job, which was at Hospice of the Valley in San Jose, which no longer in existence, but I wrote for the Help the Development team and was doing conferences, you know, and so all of those little things I'm still doing in my life. I had assistants at the time, and I don't have that now, which is sort of, the bane of my existence. It's like, oh my God, how do I make, but all those things help me to do what I do now. You know, the idea that I have a background in fundraising, that I have a background in marketing, writing stories. I used to be a columnist, you know, all those things I feel have just merged into what I'm doing now. And then I don't know that I could have done what I did. Maybe I could have, probably could have, but you know, I think my website looks great because of all of the other websites that I've had to develop for things. You know what I mean? It's like one thing just, it builds up.
Yeah. Well, and there was such a time in career development where it's like specialize, focus and specialize. But how do you feel now, Amy, because you have all of these skills, what do you think about those thoughts of having to specialize or being more of a generalist and being able flexibility?
I think it depends on what career you take, right? You know, if you're going to go into marketing event planning like I did, you got to be able to do those things, or you have to be smart enough to hire someone smarter than you in that, right? That's like you always hire somebody smarter than you.
Absolutely.
Maybe not exactly in what it is that you're focused on, but. Mm-hmm. all the other things, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I think I don't know that I know the world today on what people are doing out there,
right.
But and I do know that, you know, the marketing, that's actually become a challenge for me because I've gotten so tired of screen time, right? And so I know that I need to, I've got 4 contest winners for my poetry contests, and when I've known now for over a week who they are, and it's, I got to get that out there on social media, but I've got such a block about going on social media because it's a sink, right? And that's where I know it's, I need the help in that area, right? To go bigger, I got to start getting help.
Yeah. And you're right. Social media is a sink. And I think you're right too about the, you know, you don't want your heart surgeon to be a generalist. You want them to be able to.
And that guy that makes bridges, you don't want him to be a generalist either.
No, you don't. Oh, well, with such a rich professional and creative life, how do you manage your time and balancing writing and community projects? And I know you're active in a lot of areas within the community and with the university too.
Yeah, but I've been scaling back on things. You know, and one of my I picked 2 words this year instead of 1. One is to reimagine what I'm doing, you know, does it stay like this, or are we going to reimagine it some other way? And are we going to go larger? Because I can't keep up at the pace that I'm at, because I'm not, you know, I don't feel like I'm doing it well. And there was another thought to that question, but what was the rest of that question?
Balancing your writing time with community projects. And
so my writing time, I've scheduled myself on a couple writing retreats to go away.
Oh, good.
And to actually be with other people that are working on large projects. And I'm hiring people that are working on me with edits and stuff so that I have to write. You know, it's kind of like that deadline thing. I'm paying people. Right. I'm paying to go here, or I took an at-home writing retreat online, you know, 2 weekends ago, and just some stuff. So I'm having to figure out, because I don't have that. I'm not that disciplined writer who sits it's 8:00. I'm going to go sit down and write for 3 hours. I think I must be ADD because I can't focus like that. I have to literally somehow figure out how to pin myself down.
Right. Well, I mean, with you running an organization and all that comes with that, it probably is hard to carve out that time.
Because they're 2 different animals.
Yeah. And so, to find that time just to focus and have that quiet time to do that. So that's a great idea to doing retreats. And tell us a little bit more about the online writing retreats.
That's one of the authors I had studied with years ago and who was the one that got me into the cancer writing groups. She, I've seen a couple other authors that I've studied with doing it now where it's like, okay, we're Friday through Sunday, and it was on Zoom, and she had this whole schedule thing, you know, where we'd be writing, check in. You didn't have to come to the check-ins, but in the evening you had to show up to read to the group, and we had to do one night and divide up in 2 groups to do that. But, and then she had it where 15 minutes of time with her. And so if you didn't write, you know, but I got stuff done, you know, my husband supported me in that. And it's like, and I got a lot done. I mean, I finally got my first chapter to a point where it's like, no one was complaining about anything anymore. And that was like, who knows how many renditions of that I've written. That was really good.
Yeah. That sounds great. I feel really well structured too.
Yeah. I'm going to do it again with her in April.
Yeah. Huh. Okay, well, hopefully our audience can think of that as a way to also engage and find that writing time.
Right. You know, you didn't have to go anywhere and it was cheaper that way.
Which is nice. Yeah, that's good. So are there any upcoming projects or initiatives that you have with the Ames Writers Collective?
So I mentioned the Langston Hughes event, which is going to be next week, and those poems will be read to music. And then February 28th, I'm working now with the library and the Willa Cather, National Willa Cather Center, to one of their staff, director of education, is coming to Ames, actually, to she and I are going to put on a program at the library. She'll give a talk about Willa Cather, and then we're going to do some reading from her work, which is unidentified by book or year. And it's really interesting because it's Willa Cather's 150th birthday was December 7th. And so this whole year is for the National Willa Cather Center is about celebrating her 150th year. And we're doing readings all over the country where when you read it, unless there's something like Stagecoach or Buggy in there, you don't know what time period it is. And it makes her writing so pertinent to today. And it's really interesting. So I'm real big in celebrating. Well, I'm on the board of the Foundation for the Willa Cather Center. And then we have, of course, the 1 week writing program at the end of June for the kids. So that's kind of it for right now. And then we'll planning on some fall stuff.
Well, that's great. That's a lot.
A lot.
So you have successfully engaged diverse groups within the community through your initiatives. What advice would you give to someone looking to use their passion for writing to make a difference within their community or within the world?
You know, it depends on whether or not you want to teach or do you want to bring it to others? You know, for me, when I first started this and I was like, oh, I want a center for writers to come together. And I meant just general writers who are writing books or whatever. And I realized when I didn't get that space, one, I don't think Ames can afford the space idea that I have for it because it would be membership driven for people to come there. Was that I was like, that wasn't the kind of writer I wanted to support. And I'm not good at working with writers on, you know, if I can hire others to do the teaching, the real teaching and editing and those sorts of things, but that I was more into this idea of generating writing that may not ever go anywhere or see the light of day, but that in someone writing it, that it has helped them personally. And so, you know, I think you have to know yourself. Who do you want to support? I mean, this is a big endeavor. And writers, well, people pay a lot of money to go study with writers. And I think, you just have to know yourself. So I have kind of gotten to know myself by launching what I did 2 years ago, which will almost be 3 years this September.
Oh my gosh, really?
I know, right?
Years. Wow. Yeah, I think I still have like pandemic, like I'm in a time warp from that. So you've discussed this a little bit about how it's impacted your life, but would you expand on how writing has really personally impacted you and what role do you see it in the future, you know, aside from your memoir that you're working on?
I have once I ever get this one off my plate, you know, I have another one, which was about my time that I spent on Maui for 2 years. I got laid off when I was 41 and because I wasn't married and I ended up going on what I call a walkabout. And, you know, I stayed there for 2 years, but it also, and I don't know if it'll coincide with it, but my mom and my dad moved my brother and I to Germany when they were roughly maybe a little bit younger at that age. And I have all the letters my mother wrote home to her parents. And so I've never read them. I found them, but I've never read them. And so I've like, you know, I wonder, can I discover more of her while I'm trying to discover me? Is there, you know, some sort of crossover? So that's an idea for a book that I have. But what it's, I don't know, it's just starting to write those three pages again this morning, it calmed me down, you know? So it's like, I have to remember that maybe that's my therapy. Some people go talk to people. Maybe I need to just write like that again, you know? And so on a smaller level, and I really have to evaluate, do I want to go bigger or do I want to just stay within the framework of what I've developed so far? And that's a big question for me this year. Because the two, I think, of words I forgot to mention were reimagine and discernment for yes or no. I tend to always say yes. And now I've started saying no to a couple of things. So in reimagining, is it this or how do I reimagine it as something else? So Right. That's, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think people are rethinking boundaries. now and thinking about themselves. And yeah, I hear that from many guests that, figuring that out.
Yeah.
Oh, and I know this was not a question that I, I know you're going to be like, oh, here she goes again. So, you know, advice for someone who, because I remember, I think it was in my first couple years of college, I was told that I was not a good writer. And repeatedly, I had a faculty member at the community college that I went to that just really made sure that
I didn't read my intro, man. I'm like, it's going in my resume.
So what advice would you give to someone who, you know, feels nervous about writing or feel like they are not good writers? What advice would you give to someone to get over that?
Well, that AmherstWritersAndArtists.org, I'll just say AmherstWritersAndArtists.org, or maybe just Amherst, I forget, but if you just put Amherst Writers and Artists in, the woman who founded that believes that, she's passed away, but she believed that everyone is a writer, that we have all been hurt by that person, right? That has told us we couldn't write. And so, you know, in these class, you know, it's just keep writing. If you've got us, everybody has a story. Maybe not every story needs to make the light of day, but everybody has a story. But the way that I lead my writing groups is we do a lot of, I have notebooks from all of these generative writing, I call the cancer groups, generative writing groups, right? Where we write to a prompt. I wrote half my memoir during COVID to writing prompts by my friend out in California who was leading a class. And, you know, it's just, it's practice. And then in the groups that I lead, we read it out loud to each other. And I swear to God, you know, it needs a million edits. But when you're reading it, what you've just written to a group, it sounds like it's publishable, right? And it's like, it sparkles and it's, I don't know, there's magic in that. And I think writing in groups like that, you know, can help you be a writer. But as if you want to be a writer, you got to be willing to edit. And so recently I wrote down some quotes from it may have been that weekend I was taking, that the real writing happens in the editing. Sometimes you can over edit, but if you really let it, it's the editing that gets to the heart of what you're trying to write about. But you have to practice. You have to do it. And I think everybody's a writer if they would just do it.
I agree. I believe that with creativity. I'll hear right. People say, I'm not creative. You're human. Every human is creative. And I believe that with writing and communication, because we have to do that. So we can do it.
Right.
Oh, our last question that we asked every guest is, how do you define innovation?
So, because I'm a writer, I always go straight to the dictionary. And I forgot to go to that one there. But the idea of innovation is just getting the implementation of ideas, right? And the Ames Writers Collective has been the implementation of a lot of ideas. But eventually, to do it well, I think you've got to decide on what you're going to pare it down to. And that, you know, I can have a million ideas and I could be doing a million things, but if they're not all, you know, if they don't all work for me, that's not real innovation. And I think that you have to be willing to bring others in on it because, you know, there's get multiple ideas from different people. And some are implementers of the innovation and others aren't, you know, and so it's like knowing those things. It's not just this one thing, you know, it's just to be innovative. First, you have to have the ideas, but you have to be able to cull them down.
Yeah, I like that, focusing them down, paring them down, and then, yeah, bringing others in. And you may not be the person to implement it.
Right.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, really appreciate having you here. It's just a joy. And the Ames community is so fortunate to have your passion within it to help fill a gap that we've had and in this area. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I can tell I'm filling a gap when the parents come, drop the kids off. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, there's so many soccer opportunities and swimming opportunities, but they're just like, oh, thank you for having these writing workshops for my kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, makes sense because communication is so important. It really is.
Yeah.
So as we bring our conversation with Anna McCracken to a close, I'm reminded of the profound impact that words can have, not just on the page, but in the hearts and minds of those they reach. Anna's dedication to fostering a sense of community, healing, and expression through writing is a testament to the transformative power of storytelling. Through the Ames Writers Collective and her numerous initiatives, she has created spaces where voices, often silenced or overlooked, can be heard and celebrated. Today's discussion has been a journey through the landscape of creativity, resilience, and the unyielding belief in the power of written words to connect us all. Anna's work reminds us that writing is not just an art form, but a vital tool for personal and communal growth. For those inspired by our conversation, I encourage you to explore the Ames Writers Collective and perhaps find your path through writing. Whether it's joining a workshop, participating in a community program, or simply putting pen to paper, remember, as Anna has shown us, your story matters. Thank you, Anna, for sharing your insights and experiences and passion. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this inspiring journey. Remember, writing, connecting, and creating communities where every story is valued is essential. I'm Dr. Yolanda Sanders, and I'm signing off until our next time. Keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.